Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. I'm your election guru, Mark Braun here. Glad you could join us today. I remind you, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read in AIRS ALA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. You got it? Good. All right. So we're going to be covering city stuff, local stuff today, city and county stuff. And we're going to be mostly going over some last minute results from the primary this past June. So we're going to start off with this one from the Los Angeles Times Thursday, June 4, 2026. Durazo Horvath declared victory in LA County Supervisor races by Connor Sheets. Lindsay Horvath and Maria Elena Durazo declared victory in their campaigns for Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors after election returns showed them taking commanding leads. Horvath was running for a second term representing District 3 as supervisor. Durazo, a Democratic state senator from Los Angeles, is running for the District 1 seat held by Supervisor Helda Solis, who was termed out after more than a decade on the board. Horvath was well ahead of three challengers in District 3, which covers much of the San Fernando Valley and Westside communities, including Venice and Pacific Palisades. They were Chanya Ari, a real estate agent who lives in the San Fernando Valley, Tomas Sidenfadam, a tech firm chief executive, and Carmenlina Minasova, a medical professional and resident of the Valley. I'm incredibly grateful for this victory and appreciate that the voters have made clear that the kind of change that we are bringing to Los Angeles County is something they want to see more of, Horvath said in an interview Wednesday, a day after declaring victory. This decisive win last night lets us know that they want us to get right back to work, so that's my plan. Votes from Tuesday's primary were still being counted Wednesday, but Durazo had a big lead over four other candidates in District 1, which stretches from downtown Los Angeles across the San Gabriel Valley. They were Noel Almario, a family healthcare consultant, and Duwala, former La Puente mayor, David Argudo, Elaine Alanez, president of the Westlake North Neighborhood Council, and Annabella Figueroa Mazarigos, an LA County employee. This campaign was powered by working people, families, immigrants, seniors, and small business owners who believe LA County can do better, Durazo said in an email statement. In Sacramento, I fought for workers' housing, healthcare, and immigrant justice. As your county supervisor, I will continue that work here at home. In District 3, the Palisades fire has been more salient because the district contains the configuration's entire burn zone. Horvath has been a leading voice on local recovery, but her challengers said she should have done more both before and after the fire, which burned nearly 7,000 buildings and killed 12 people in Pacific Palisades, Malibu, and Topanga in January 2025. Homelessness, public safety, and housing costs have been a top issues for both races. In District 1, Durazo emphasized her record of helping workers both as a labor leader and in Sacramento. Her challengers also touted their support for policies to help Angelenos who are struggling with high prices and rising rents. That was Durazo Horvath declare victory in LA County Supervisor races by Connor Sheets from the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, June 4, 2026. All right, and now to one of the headline races and a shocking result from the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, June 7, 2026. City attorney out. First in 93 years. Heidi Feldstein Soto lacked clear messaging amid a controversial tenure, analysts say, by Sonia Sharp and James Queeley. The last time Angelenos sacked an incumbent city attorney in the primaries, almost 30% of them were unemployed. That was May 2, 1933, the nadir of the Great Depression when sprawling encampments blanketed downtown. King Kong ruled movie theaters, and violent crime reached a fever pitch not seen again for nearly half a century. Incumbent city attorney Heidi Feldstein Soto's blowout defeat on Tuesday may have little in common with Erin P. Werner's primary loss 93 years ago, but themes of Depression-era Los Angeles echo through the contest. Marissa Roy, a deputy attorney general with the California Department of Justice who leads the race with ballots still being counted, wooed voters with shoe leather and social media savvy, promising to use the office to fight for wage workers and tenants. But it was the city's powerful unions and its increasingly democratic socialist bloc that propelled her to the top spot, mirroring the coalition that drove California's sharp left turn in the early 30s. Meanwhile, County Prosecutor John McKinney tapped into voter frustration with homeless encampments, a blighted downtown, and general distrust of City Hall to pull off a last-minute heist of the second runoff spot. McKinley only started campaigning in earnest 5 weeks ago, but managed to win votes with a tough-on-crime campaign, even as some categories of city crime have dipped to historic lows. On Friday morning, Feldstein Soto issued a formal concession, quoting Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as well as Elphaba of Wicked, and Deuteronomy 6:5. I've given it all my heart, all my soul, and all my might, and will continue to do so through the end of my term this December, the incumbent wrote of her work, paraphrasing a key commandment about how to love God from Judaism's central prayer. Her campaign did not respond to a request for comment for this article. Feldstein Soto's ouster is nearly unprecedented. Werner's 1933 loss is the only similar instance since the city adopted its current primary ballot process in 1917, according to the city clerk's office. No other city council member or mayor has ever failed to advance out of the primary when facing two or more opponents. This is not something that has happened in the lifetimes of most people who follow city government, said Mike Bonin, former city council member and executive director of the Pat Brown Institute for Public Affairs at Cal State LA. McKinney's sudden emergence in the race in May saw him hijack the incumbent support from law enforcement. His campaign received $3 million worth of independent expenditures. An official with the group supporting McKinney, who spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak to the media, said an internal poll showed Feldstein Soto falling nearly 10 points outside the runoff a week before Election Day. Since Roy had already captured the support of the County Democratic Party and energized left-leaning voters, that put Feldstein Soto in the center, analysts said, which left her vulnerable in a race that most people casting ballots hadn't closely followed. To the extent that people had any information, they knew that one of them basically wanted to be tougher and somebody on the other side wanted to be kinder. That left her with very little room to maneuver, said Roy Baer, a longtime consultant to veteran politicians in the city. Roy micro-targeted likely progressive voters in social media spots, experts said, presenting an affable presence in her ever-present purple blazer while sharing her vision of serving as the people's lawyer. Boosted by a massive influx of cash from rental giant Airbnb, some of McKinney's ads played up his hard luck upbringing in one of New Jersey's most violent cities. His campaign also sent out texts that painted his opponents as George Gascon-style Democrats, invoking the former progressive district attorney as a boogeyman for voters anxious about crime. AI videos depicted McKinney as a stoic, suit-clad crime fighter walking through a dystopian version of LA's metro system. The debate isn't necessarily two candidates on one stage appealing to one person. It's for attention and information in the same sphere, said Spencer Slovic of Mycorrhiza Digital, who ran Roy's digital campaign, advertising. That battle of information will play out almost in almost different realms. Without a compelling story for her powerful but poorly understood role, Feldstein Soto often struggled to explain her achievements in office. In a recent interview with The Times, she said she delivered on public safety, public integrity, and public services. She went on to discuss granular improvements she made to the office, such as limiting access to law enforcement databases by former employees, modernizing internal systems, and improving the rapport between the city attorney's office and LAPD. By her own admission, she does not often publicly celebrate her accomplishments. "I didn't hold some big press conference and hop up on a white horse and declare myself Joan of Arc and the savior of all things Los Angeles," she said, "which I should have done." Tumult during Feldstein Soto's lone term in office was easier for voters to identify. The cost of litigation exploded. A high-ranking city lawyer accused her of abusing her power prosecuting political enemies, mistreating employees, and engaging in inappropriate alcohol consumption. Feldstein Soto contended that she improved her office's rapport with the LAPD, but the police union's decision to rescind its endorsement of her and instead back McKinney cost her a key voting block. Feldstein Soto's message was at times muddled and lacked the flair of her challengers, political observers said. Campaign finance records show she paid for 80 email blasts, mailers, and other messages that sought to influence voters. In one video, she stood in front of a static background and talked for 3 minutes straight about her record while describing her opponents as representing the extreme left and extreme right. She attacked both for receiving large sums of money from special interests, especially McKinney, for accepting Airbnb's largesse. Feldstein Soto sued the rental giant for price gouging in the wake of the 2025 wildfires. Roy's campaign sent out 180 communications. Records show the bulk of them ads for Instagram and Facebook, where her team said they saw instantly what stories resonated with likely voters and which were duds. Slovak said a clip from Heidi talking about how she wasn't going to prosecute the Trump administration seemed to touch a nerve with voters. "That was by far our best performing ad," he said, adding, "What Democrats really want in primaries is someone who will fight and have some sort of backbone." McKinney had just 23 communications, campaign records show, plus 19 made by independent groups. He often leaned into the same gritty visuals that define mayoral candidate Spencer Pratt's viral AI spots. In a race for a position most voters don't understand, McKinney's and Roy's ability to play a consistent character may have proved critical, political analysts say. "The vast majority of voters started off with no strong feelings about the race," Bear said, "and nobody had any votes locked down other than their friends and neighbors." That was City Attorney Out, first in 93 years, by Sonia Sharp and James Queeley. From the Los Angeles Times, Sunday, June 7, 2026. And now on to city council elections. From the California section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, June 12, 2026. "What discontent? Voters choose status quo in LA City Hall races," by Melissa Gomez. Los Angeles primary election season was characterized by calls for change. But when the votes were tallied, the powers that be prevailed. Two City Hall fixtures, Mayor Karen Bass and City Councilmember Nathia Rahman, will compete in the November 3rd runoff after knocking out Spencer Pratt, the former reality TV personality who campaigned as an outsider looking to shake things up. And in a break with recent history, all of the City Council members running for re-election cruised to victories. Since the 2020 election, at least one council member every 2 years had lost their seat to a well-funded, well-organized challenger. Fernando Guerrera, director of the Center for the Study of Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount University, said voters sometimes favor the local representatives even if they have issues with the city government in general. "When voters are frustrated, they often say the system's not working. The only one working for me is my council member," Guerrera said. "Voters were frustrated with the city, frustrated with the way things are going, but were able to identify their council member as one of their few advocates, the one fighting the system with them." The one exception was city attorney Heidi Feldstein Soto, who became the first city attorney to miss the runoff since 1933. Feldstein Soto herself, under assault from two sides, Deputy State Attorney General Marissa Roy, a Democratic Socialist with union support, and John McKinney, a Deputy District Attorney with backing from law enforcement and short-term rental giant Airbnb. City Controller Kenneth Mejia, on the other hand, managed to trounce challenger Zach Sokoloff, even though Sokoloff's mother spent $7.5 million on her son's behalf, while Mejia had just $146,000 in contributions and $500,000 in matching funds. Several council members were also bracing for tough campaigns. For most, they never materialized. City Council member Monica Rodriguez was unopposed, and council members Hugo Soto Martinez, Katie Yaroslavsky, and Tim McCosker breezed through, winning by double-digit margins. Council members Eunice Hernandez of the 1st District and Tracy Park of the 11th District were both overcame well-funded challengers to secure new four-year terms. Folks see who their representatives are, they support the fight that they're taking on, and they feel the difference in leadership, Hernandez said. Hernandez, among the youngest members of the council, unexpectedly unseated incumbent Gil Cedillo, who was seeking his third term in 2022. As she campaigned for a second term, Hernandez faced a pack of four challengers, including Maria Lou Calanchi, the director of nonprofit Expand LA, who had raised nearly $200,000 in contributions, unlocked matching funds, and saw an additional $300,000 in independent expenditures spent on her behalf by outside groups that did not coordinate with the campaign. Hernandez credited her win to the campaign's ground game and meeting voters at the door to combat the dark money funding mailers against her, as well as her record in office, such as advocating for a lowered rent cap. One of my colleagues told me, "What we've done is not easy," she said. "I see it as people see what we're doing, and they want us to keep fighting for them." McCosker, who secured a second term, said incumbents have historically done well in L.A., but in recent years have tested them to stay true to the needs of their communities. "We see how people react to incumbency, and so all the more reason for you to be connected to your community and respond to community, he said. "You had a set of candidates on the ballot on June 2nd who just worked their tails off from day one until the last day of the fourth year." Guerrera pointed to Park, who represents the 11th District on the west side and has become a local hero to many victims of the Palisades fire, as an example of how voters stood by their representatives. Park faced Faiza Malik, a public interest attorney endorsed by the Los Angeles chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, a group that has successfully organized to oust incumbent council members in recent years. The contest became the most expensive council race this year, nearly breaking $2 million in contributions. The majority of the contributions went to Park, who raised $1.3 million. Sue Cole, a resident of the Palisades who lost her home in the fire, said the areas burned by the fire are blanketed with Park yard signs. In Westchester, where she relocated, Park signs also dominated from lawns. While there has been frustration with the overall rebuilding process and everyday issues, Cole, who volunteered for Park's campaign, said she and others in the 11th District feel Park has been an advocate every step of the way. "You look to government officials for help, and if you see them doing other things as opposed to what you as a community desperately need, you'd be frustrated and angry and ready to make a change," Cole said. "But with Tracy, everybody looks to what she's accomplished in the last 4 years and says, 'Thank you. God, we have this woman who is willing to do this for us.'" Although the council incumbents prevail, City Hall will see at least two new faces after the November 3rd general election due to term limits. Estuardo Mazarigos and Jose Huarte will vie for the District 9 council seat that is currently occupied by Curran Price, and Tim Gaspar and Barry Worth Gervin will square up for the District 3 seat held by incumbent Bob Blumenfield. That was What Discontent, Voters Choose Status Quo in City LA City Hall Races by Melissa Gomez from the California section of the Los Angeles Times, Friday, June 2nd, 2026. All right, we have one more result here, and this is from a county judge race from the city and state section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, June 16, 2026. County judge loses re-election. Talcon Valbuena defeats beleaguered Robert Draper of the Superior Court by Queenie Wong and James Queeley. Los Angeles County Judge Robert Draper, who faces misconduct allegations and health concerns, lost his bid for re-election in a rare defeat for an incumbent. Deputy District Attorney Talcon Valbuena defeated Draper with more than 56% of the vote in the June 2nd primary election. Draper, an 84-year-old judge of the Los Angeles County Superior Court, captured roughly 43% of the vote, according to the county election results. The California Secretary of State still needs to certify the results. "I am deeply humbled by the trust that voters have placed in me," Con Valbueno said in a statement Saturday. "I look forward to earning the public's trust every day through hard work, thoughtful preparation, and a steadfast commitment to equal justice for all." Kyle Valbuena, a gay Muslim and refugee from Pakistan who works in the Hollywood Mental Health Court, added that he's lived the American dream and hopes to honor that gift by serving on the bench. He's expected to start his new role in January. In a statement, Draper congratulated Kyle Valbuena and wished him the best in his judicial career. "Working as a judge for more than a decade," he said, "has been the greatest honor and professional joy of his life because it gave him the opportunity to serve the people of Los Angeles County." The race between Draper and Con Valbuena was filled with high-stakes drama and an uphill battle for the sitting judge. In January, the state's Commission on Judicial Performance filed charges against Draper over allegations of sexual harassment and improper and biased comments, among other allegations. He was accused of stroking a female lawyer's hair after making irrelevant remarks to a black attorney about black history, black football players, the Civil Rights Act, and the Black Lives Matter movement. Draper contested the claims and denied all wrongdoing and criticized the Commission on Judicial Performance. "This is like the Russian mafia. It's like Germany," he previously told the Times. "There's no due process for any judge." Despite the election results, he could still be removed from his seat before his term ends on January 4 or be cleared of the charges. In a statement, Draper complained about what he described as judges interested in their own power and position than in what is good for the court, who used the commission to silence anyone who they think stands in their way. He described the commission's proceedings as an insurmountable barrier to his re-election. "I intend to pursue my defense as vigorously and publicly in that proceeding as possible because it's not really about me," he said. Ahead of the primary election, Draper also faced concerns about whether he was healthy enough to continue serving as a judge. Two judges previously told the Times that Draper spent the last 3 years relegated to a room in the Santa Monica courthouse without a computer or caseload. Draper previously told the Times he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease but remained fit to serve on the bench. Draper, a longtime business litigator, became a Los Angeles Superior County Court judge in 2012 after being appointed to the position by then-Governor Jerry Brown. Another incumbent judge who went through a tense re-election bid, Pat Connolly, narrowly fended off a challenge from Deputy District Attorney Paul Thompson, whose career accolades included winning a rape conviction against Harvey Weinstein. Connolly bested Thompson by a margin of less than 1%, or about 15,000 votes, after a race that saw Thompson attack Connolly for his history of admonishments by the California Judicial Performance Review Board. A sitting judge also accused fellow members on the bench who supported Connolly of harassment and intimidation during the race, the Times previously reported. "I'm truly humbled and honored to be reelected," Connolly said in a statement. "I'm looking forward to continuing my work protecting the rights of all thoughtfully, fairly, and independently." That was County Judge Loses Reelection by Queenie Wong and James Queeley from the City and State section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, June 16, 2026. right, let's go back to the mayor's race and an article regarding one of the ousted candidates from the Los Angeles Times, Thursday, June 11, 2026. Pratt's disaffected base confronts the future by Jenny Jarvie. When Republican Spencer Pratt burst into Los Angeles politics, venting a torrent of online fury against Mayor Karen Bass's handling of the Palisades fire, he pitched his mayoral campaign as a full-bore challenge to LA's political status quo. The former reality TV star, who lost his home in the blaze, started as a long shot, but emerged as a national story with the ability to harvest social media attention, rally a base, and dominate the news cycle. But in a city overwhelmingly Democratic, where Republicans make up just 15% of registered voters, even some of his supporters wondered how far he could rise. In the end, voters selected Bass, a Democratic centrist and Democratic Socialist City Council member Nithya Raman, who ran to Bass's left, to face off in the runoff. Still, for many of the 200,000 Angelenos who voted for Pratt, his brash social media-fueled campaign was not just a long exercise in trolling. Pratt gave voice to the discontent with the system of one-party rule and said things they too often feel uncomfortable saying. And now they face a difficult choice of whom to support in November. I know a lot of people who are disappointed, said Megan Daum, an LA writer and podcaster, a former Los Angeles Times columnist who endorsed Pratt. They are saying, okay, now what? What can we do? While Pratt did not make the runoff, political experts said his candidacy tapped into Angelenos' dissatisfaction with the Democratic establishment and resonated with a sizable number of Angelenos who are rarely represented in LA politics. He identified a previously invisible level of anger and frustration. Dan Schnur, a longtime political professor at USC, UC Berkeley, and Pepperdine University, said of Pratt, "The question going forward is whether he or someone else can shape that raw emotion into a movement." Pratt has yet to put out a statement conceding the race or contesting the results. As a stream of Republicans, including President Trump, made unfounded allegations of election fraud in California, the campaign's most online candidate was conspicuously absent on X and Instagram. Some Democrats in Los Angeles urged Pratt to make good on his promise to leave the city if Bass or Rahman were elected. Late-night TV host Jimmy Kimmel, a prominent Democrat, told Pratt he had rented him a U-Haul. Despite the snark from Democrats, political observers say Pratt changed the terms of LA's mayoral debate. He forced the more conventional candidates to talk about the issues in a way that would not have been the case if he weren't in the race, Schnur said. For the first time in years, there was a critical mass of citizens who were done pretending that what they see before their eyes isn't really there, Dom wrote on her Substack. The people in charge will have to answer to those citizens. In the final weeks of the campaign, Pratt became ubiquitous in the national media. There were profiles in high-end publications, podcast interviews, and regular reports from Fox News. But the results show he fell short of persuading enough Angelenos to make the runoff. It doesn't appear that he's impacted the political underpinnings of the deep blue city like Los Angeles, Schnur said. His impact was less ideological than attitudinal. He wasn't convincing the voters to become more conservative. He was convincing them that it was okay for them to vent their anger in an unconventional way. Dissatisfaction is building in LA as the city's cost of living mounts and a new generation of young Angelenos are unable to buy homes. Many are concerned about the lack of visible progress on street homelessness. Some are angry at what they see as city leaders' poor preparation and response to the Palisades fire. Ultimately, the momentum for change in Los Angeles was divided. As Pratt challenged Bass from the right, Rahman attacked to the left of Bass on homelessness and policing and made affordability a key plank of her campaign. Whatever their concerns about the status quo, many Angelenos were unwilling to vote for a Republican. During the course of the campaign, Dom said she had numerous conversations with Angelenos who said, "I can't associate with anybody who voted for Trump. I can't have them in my house. I can't have a conversation with them. I want nothing to do with them." A 42-year-old millennial who became famous on The Hills and owns a business selling healing crystals, Pratt had no political experience when he entered the mayoral race. He didn't even appear to have a campaign manager. "The system in Los Angeles isn't struggling, it's fundamentally broken," Pratt said as he launched his campaign on January 7, the anniversary of the fire. "It is a machine designed to protect the people at the top and the friends they exchange favors with, while the rest of us drown in toxic smoke and ash." Bombastic and full of braggadocio, Pratt critiqued what he saw as Bass's failure to prepare for and respond to wildfires. He berated city leaders for not doing enough to get unhoused people off the streets. He rallied against the city's challenges with public safety, potholes, and abuse of dogs on Skid Row. He even seized on a comment Bass made on the campaign trail about using taxpayer money to fund dental care for meth users. As Pratt talked about homelessness, his message resonated with Marissa Comstock, 36, a stay-at-home mom and former software engineer in Eagle Rock. "It's totally obvious to me," she said. "We need to get these people off the street." Last year, Comstock said, she and her husband had a negative encounter at Griffith Park as they pushed their daughters around in strollers. Just a few minutes into their hike, she said, they were accosted by an unhoused person who screamed at them and threatened to cut out their daughter's legs. Since that incident, Comstock said she takes her daughters only to places like the Huntington or Descanso Gardens that require membership to be admitted. "I don't feel comfortable even being on regular streets," she said. "If there's some crazy homeless person, what am I supposed to do?" Pratt did extraordinarily well in capturing attention and developing a message, said Paul Mitchell, vice president of the Sacramento-based nonpartisan firm Political Data Incorporated. Many Angelenos, he noted, had a better sense of Pratt's viewpoint than they did of much more deeply funded California gubernatorial candidates such as Matt Mahan or Javier Becerra. During his campaign, Pratt did not express support for Trump or the Make America Great Again movement. He insisted he was a nonpartisan candidate running on local issues. "I'm going to show everybody that I'm their mayor," Pratt said on election night. But even if Pratt was not explicitly MAGA, his reality TV theatrics mixed with anti-establishment populism were so MAGA-coded that he struggled to persuade disaffected liberal Angelenos. He referred to the homeless as fentanyl zombies. He rallied against California's socialism. He called Bass basura, Spanish for trash. When Trump spoke of Pratt, telling reporters, "I heard he's a big MAGA person," Rahman was quick to share Trump's remarks on social media, warning Angelenos that Pratt was wildly out of step with their views. Although Pratt impressed some political observers with his performance in a May 6 televised debate with Bass and Rahman, others said he alienated a significant portion of Angelenos with some of his social media antics. He could have talked about the drug use and the risks and the filth and the fire risks and all that, said Rob Stutzman, a GOP political strategist, of Pratt's zombie rhetoric, but then paired that with, "My God, these liberals are leaving these people out here to die," and expressed some humanity towards the population that's only on the streets. Ultimately, Dom said Pratt was a terrible candidate. "He did a million things wrong," she said. "The whole time I was yelling on Twitter about how he got to stop it. The AI videos are gonna hurt him. The basura stuff and the zombie stuff. Like, stop it. Stop it." As Pratt's campaign came to an end, Stutzman said it's unclear that he represents any kind of lasting political movement. The question remains, did he create a political movement or did he exploit the opportunity to run for mayor to restoke his diminished fame? Stutzman said. He's in the mold of a Kardashian. He's just found ways to be famous without ever really doing anything important. I suspect that this was more about him acting out as to what he is as a reality celebrity versus becoming a leader of a political movement in LA. We'll see. When Angelenos go to the polls in November, there are several paths for Pratt voters. Some, Mitchell said, will probably sit out the election entirely. You'll get some Republicans who vote for Rahman because they're like, well, she's a socialist and I can't stand her, but I'm just voting no on Bass. And then you have a lot of Republicans who are like, okay, Rahman's a socialist. After Rahman made it to the runoff, Bass's campaign slammed the city council member for voting against hiring more police and blocking efforts to keep homeless encampments away from schools. Meanwhile, Rahman positioned herself as the anti-status quo candidate. In a statement celebrating her advance to the general election, Rahman did not mention Pratt or his supporters, but railed against powerful interests in City Hall. Working people pay the price in higher rents, depleted services, and a city that has stopped working for them, she said. If you're as frustrated by the broken status quo as I am, I hope you'll join our movement to build a city that works for everyone. Even as Dom felt depressed that Pratt's campaign was not continuing, she said she felt more engaged in LA politics than she ever has before. She planned to vote in November and would be watching both Bass and Rahman to see how they respond to Angelino's concerns about street homelessness. If Karen Bass said, okay, I get it, housing first is not the panacea that I've been thinking it is. Seriously, I'm going to put together a task force of people who are going to actually think this through. I would be following that. I would be very curious, Dom said. Same to Nithia, if Nithia said it too. I'm open to either of them, I guess. Comstock said she would probably vote for Bass in the runoff. Nithia Raman is just way too far on the socialist scale for me and will likely do more damage rather than Karen Bass's ineffectualness, she said. I don't want to go any farther left. That was Pratt's disaffected base confronts the future by Jenny Jarvey from the Los Angeles Times for Thursday, June 11, 2026. And with the time left, let us review what we will be looking forward to on the November ballot in LA City. Of course, we have the leading mayoral race between the incumbent Mayor Karen Bass and Councilmember Nithia Raman. And in city council races, the race for District Number 3 is up for grabs and is going to be heading for a runoff where the candidates will be Tim Gaspar, an insurance executive, and Barry Worth Gervin, director of the Community Affairs for County Supervisor Lindsay Horvath. There will also be a runoff in District 9, where the incumbent is not running for re-election, and the runoff will consist of Jose Ugarte and Estuardo Mazarigos. And to recap those races that have in fact been decided, with Council the District Number 1, the incumbent Eunice Hernandez was safely reelected with approximately 58% of the vote. Then Maria Lou Calanchi with approximately 16%, Raul Claros 10%, Nelson Grande approximately 9%, and Silvia Robledo 7%. And in the 5th district race, the incumbent is Katie Yaroslavsky, re-elected handily, 64% of the vote, over Henry Mantel at 26% and Morgan Euler at 10%. Monica Rodriguez in the District 7 race was unopposed. She had 34,801 votes. And then we have the race in District 11, where the incumbent is Tracy Park. She was handily reelected with approximately 60% of the vote to 40% for Faiza Malik. In District 13, the incumbent was Hugo Soto Martinez, handily reelected as well, 68% of the vote there, over Dylan Kendall with approximately 12%, Rich Sarian also approximately 12%, and Coulter Carlisle at 8%. In District Number 3, the incumbent was Tim McCosker. He was re-elected handily as well with approximately 77% of the vote over one lone opponent, Jordan Rivers, who got 23%. In the Board of Education races, there was District Number 2, where the incumbent was Rocio Rodriguez, handily re-elected with 64% of the vote over Raquel Zamora, who got approximately 36%. District Number 4, the incumbent is Nick Melvoin. He too was handily reelected, 62% of the vote over Ankur Patel with 38%. District 6, the incumbent is Kelly Gonias, was unopposed, and she got approximately 82,226 votes. So those are all the results from the city elections. So we'll look forward to the mayoral election in November. And of course, we've got statewide elections too. And of course, there's many other races happening around the country. So keep it right here for everything regarding elections and elected officials in the city, the state, and the nation. Until next time, everybody, this is your election guru, Mark Braun. Happy voting and peace.